Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have with me Dr. Friedemann Schwab, who's the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution, a breakthrough process for healing and empowerment with your subconscious mind. Dr. Schwab is an expert on the subconscious mind, and it's very interesting. He is a physician specializing in cardiology as well as a microbiologist with a private practice focusing on the mind-body connection. And similar to me, who is a plastic surgeon, also with an interest in the mind-body connection, we've put together a lot of different specialties to come up with some rather unique solutions to difficult problems. Certainly, fear and anxiety is very, very rampant, especially now in the population. And he talks about not just the cause of this, but some very effective treatments, and especially explains the connection to the subconscious mind. Dr. Schwab is calling us from France, and we want to welcome you.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, you want to tell the audience a little bit about how you, got interest in so many different diverse fields of study?
Well, you know, I think it's when you look back, it all makes sense. But when you are in the midst of it, you're thinking, okay, you know, you're just following your heart, and you just go in the direction that you feel, well, that's just the right thing to do. So I started out as the son of two doctors, and I had a sister who is a doctor. So we were like a family of physicians, and you can imagine how these lunch conversations were going. And
right.
Some people certainly didn't want to listen to that. And, you know, after going into cardiology, because I guess this was something that was always close to my heart, to work mm-hmm. with that so important part of our body, I realized that, you know, we are, the more specialized we are becoming, the less we are seeing the whole person. And mm-hmm. I used to work in a very big cardiology department of a university hospital. And, you know, basically people came in, they get their treatments or, you know, the processes that they need to undergo mm-hmm. to get their heart back in rhythm or open up again, and, you know, off they go. And there was no real discussion about what's actually causing a person to have an arrhythmia or a heart attack. And it always made me a little bit feel that we are missing the point, because many people are coming back. This is not a one-time thing. You see many people with heart problems just coming back over and over again, and it seems like somehow we are not really catching the root cause. So I decided to take a little detour and try to understand the human body from a different perspective, which is then the more basic research, molecular biology perspective, where basically you are investigating the molecules and DNA of the cells. And when I got really into this and really studied it intensively, then I realized that, well, on some level, as a physician, we were not really told the truth, because we as human beings are way more capable of changing. Each cell of us has a much greater capacity of adapting than we are really made believe. And my question was then, after these years of research, how can we tap into this potential? How can we find a way to make our healing abilities stronger? And this is how I got into then the mind-body connection, and quickly realized this is not an intellectual process. This is not something we can just use our rational mind and say, okay, now I want to get stronger, I want to heal myself better. We have to really work with the deeper parts of our mind, and that's the subconscious mind. It's like the intercessor between our body and the conscious mind. It's where our emotions come from. It's where our memories are. It's a very important and in many ways undervalued and underappreciated part of our consciousness. And I studied then for years how to work with the subconscious mind, how to develop tools and processes that help us to access its potential. And that's basically how this whole process and the whole work I'm doing in the book and the private practice has been evolving.
Well, you were certainly guided throughout all of it. One thing I had noticed in my patients, I tend to attract a fairly intuitive group of people. And often when they have severe heart disease or cancer or other life-threatening diseases, and you ask them what do they think is the cause of the disease, most of them actually know what the triggers are. You know, somebody broke their heart, one of their dogs died and they had an abnormal grief reaction. You know, this is in the case of cancer. They had a hardened heart toward one of their children, and that stopped the flow of energy, and they feel that that had something to do with the heart disease. So, you know, if people ask the right questions and then, you know, like you say in your book, access the subconscious mind and increase their awareness through meditation, often the answers about why we have these potentially life-threatening conditions are right there for us to understand. And what I like about your book is that it doesn't stop with that. It actually gives exercises and very good ways to actually get rid of the fear, get rid of the anxiety, change the energy flows, and then replace it with something much more viable and useful than, say, what was put in the subconscious years ago to deal with the
thank
situation.
You. Yes, and I really wholeheartedly agree with you that we do usually know what actually has been causing our imbalance, our disease. The problem is just that usually we get so scared, especially when we have something like cancer or a chronic illness, we get so scared by what we are told, especially, you know, by doctors that saying, well, you have to do this and you have to do that, that we are not focusing on, okay, there is a root cause and I need to address it. I need to actually understand that my body is telling me something. This is not just, I am the victim of a body that is completely flawed. There is an intelligence inside of us, and that intelligence we can actually work with and learn from. And, you know, in my belief and experience, it is often that you can backtrack where these things started, especially in the physical realm, and realize that they often start with a conflict that causes us to be confused and anxious. Stress and anxiety are so often the precursors of chronic or also acute physical problems, which is why I have been focusing on fear and anxiety, because I really think we can prevent and stay healthier. We can prevent getting ill through addressing fear and anxiety before it gets transferred into the physical body.
Oh, I agree completely. You talk quite a bit about the subconscious mind as being there to protect us. And you want to talk a little bit about that, like how the subconscious mind actually works a little bit, because some people may not understand that. And also then how it'll create a fear or anxiety in order to protect us, but somehow it'll generalize or it'll go a little bit too far, and then we start reacting to things that really are not threatening to us.
Right. So the subconscious basically is this part of our mind that has been and is taking care of most of our functions since the first moment of our existence. You know, our intellectual part, the conscious mind, really has to develop. It has to slowly grow and gain these neural pathways, whereas the subconscious is really much more active and present throughout, especially these early times in our life, and of course throughout our entire life. I mean, there are studies that say that 80% of our daily activities are actually controlled by the subconscious mind, and as I said, this is where the emotions come from. This is where our memories are stored. This is where most of our body functions are regulated. The subconscious is taking care of these automatic behaviors. You know, you wash your hair, you don't even think about it because you're already in your office. You know, these kind of things, everything that basically doesn't require us to be conscious aware of it, the subconscious does it. So it's a very powerful part of the mind, and it has two prime agendas. One is for us to be safe. The other one is to make us ultimately happy. So it's quite powerful to know, well, you know, it has actually a purpose for us, and it is looking out for us. Now, if you're growing up in an environment where the stability of your daily life wasn't necessarily a given, your subconscious tends to focus more on keeping you safe than on making you happy. So this is where, on a subconscious level, you develop protective strategies that work when you are a child. You know, I mean, how many people know that when they had, maybe parents that were always arguing or a sibling that was always torturing you, that you needed to hide out. And the best thing to hide out was to become invisible, to, you know, hide behind a book, to lock yourself away. Or, you know, some of us have realized that the best way to make sure that there is peace and that you don't get in trouble is to please, or to be a, you know, very vigilant perfectionist. Or, you know, some of us become the chameleons and they feel like, well, I can really adapt to everyone and this way be liked by everyone. We develop those things naturally. The subconscious does that for us. Now, here's the problem with the subconscious mind. The subconscious ultimately continues to do the things that work, no matter if they are still necessary or not. And that means that if you have had a protective pattern of you, for example, becoming invisible, and you know, well, it doesn't really help me when I have to give a presentation at work because all I want to do is to become invisible, because a part of me says, no, this is dangerous. There is, you know, all these people that can potentially judge you or criticize you. If you're not able to communicate with the subconscious mind and say, you know, this is actually safe, I have it covered, this is not like in my childhood, you're basically then running into these panic attacks or into these anxiety moments before those, you know, events that threaten the subconscious ever occur. And this is why it's so important to understand the subconscious needs guidance. It otherwise just continues the same patterns over and over again. And if we're not giving it direction and guidance, it will just continue to do this. And this has a lot to do with most of people's anxieties, that they just don't know how to redirect the subconscious mind.
Yeah, that's true. The fears that I had experienced most of my life had nothing to do with anything that was present and I was conscious of. I would have these fears come up and then find out later that I was standing in front of a person that was intending to harm me. But at the time, I didn't know that they were doing that. I had no conscious recollection of that. So I began to realize that my emotions would come up and warn me about dangerous situations when I had no conscious knowledge of that until then later it was revealed to me through another way. And it was just weird.
Well,
because,
that's really interesting,
I would say, why am I feeling anger toward this person or resentment or, you know, some negative emotion when I didn't even really know the person?
Was it when you were an adult?
It was both. I didn't know it when I was in a child. When I was a child, I didn't understand that was what was happening. But it's almost like the emotion comes through as a warning not to deal with that person. And, like, I'll give you an example.
Let me give you an example.
It's really interesting. We have a surgery center here, and we had an anesthesiologist that wasn't a regular anesthesiologist but used to come sometimes. And every time I passed him in the hall, I would just bristle with irritation. I mean, and there was no reason. Well, it turned out that he was stealing fentanyl drugs. from here. And we found out because we actually, one of the techs went in his little bag and found the empty syringes, you know. And so, you see, now consciously I have no knowledge that he's doing anything. You know, I have no evidence of anything. But every time I pass him in the hallway, I bristle. And bristle is a good word for it. It's like extreme irritation at somebody. And then later on I find out he's stealing drugs and he's giving, you know, he's doing something he shouldn't be doing. So we confronted him with it.
You know, you're making a very interesting point, because I think we have to be aware that the emotions can certainly be, you know, warning systems that, you know,
are
not to be suppressed or ignored.
Right.
I think our emotions are very powerful. And that's, you know, what you're describing is also a function of the subconscious mind, which is kind of this intuitive knowingness. You know, you enter a room and you know that there was a fight going on, but you don't see any evidence, but you feel it. There's actually a study that showed that people can subconsciously smell other people's fear. And so there is definitely an awareness that we don't even consciously can compute. But again, the intuitiveness, this awareness of the subconscious is so acute and astute that it can give us the information. However, and that's the trick that we need to understand, sometimes that sensitivity is so heightened because we were consciously so frightened that we also overinterpret certain situations, you know, where we are still looking through those distortion filters and generalization filters, you know, where, let's say you are a child and you were always frightened of authority figures. And so every time you get into a situation with an authority figure, you get frightened again, although your boss is very nice, or maybe your father-in-law is a very jovial person, but because it appears that, okay, authority figures, you need to be careful, you cannot trust them, it distorts basically reality. So when you have a, I mean, I think in your case, what you're describing is that you come from a place of calmness and then you feel this weird bristling emotional charge.
Right.
That's
which is
different
unusual.
Than when you are.
That's an unusual emotion for me. Right.
Exactly.
But I think, but it's been very accurate. I mean, every time I felt it, then later on I found out why. I mean, it was very, it's very interesting.
Yeah. And you can, I mean, when you have this baseline of calmness, and this is really, I think, what the book is also about, it is not about getting rid of anxiety. It is not about, you know, just being able to suppress these emotions. It is actually for you, like you wonderfully described, to be able then to use this emotion as an inner guidance system appropriately.
Right.
And
that's
really, I mean, you don't want to get rid of anxiety or the ability to have anxiety if you have something like that. Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting what you said in the book about generalization. You used the example of the rope in the tree that looks like a snake. You know, we all pretty much usually have a fear of snakes. I actually took a snake handling course in high school, so I was able to handle snakes that were venomous without too much problems. But other than that, you know, most of us have a healthy regard for snakes. So if we see something that looks like a snake in our, you know, in our peripheral vision, we will often have that reaction that you would if it was a real snake. And that's the generalization thing that I think is important to understand.
Well, there are three, actually, you know, filters or three ways we are filtering information through the subconscious mind. The generalization is certainly one. The other one is a distortion where you blow things up out of proportion.
Right.
You make, you know, things that are actually very harmless all of a sudden a life or death situation. And then there's also this deletion, which I think with anxiety is also a very powerful one where, you know, let's say you are anxious because you're always insecure, you always feel not good enough, you always feel you're going to fail. You may have all these successes and so many people that love you and revere you and honor you, and you delete them out of your awareness simply because the filter that says you're not good enough only lets information come through that confirms that you're not good enough.
Right.
And the little tiny things, you have a mustard stain on your blouse, and then you say, oh my God, yeah, here we go. That's me. Absolutely not good enough. And that's a really, you know, also interesting thing to know. Whatever we see as reality is really not true. Whatever we see about ourselves is really just a very small fragment of that, what we actually are. And so it's a very exciting discovery journey when you're able to remove those filters or replace them at least with filters that allow you to see much more of who you are and much more opportunities in life.
Yeah, that is important. And one of the chapters that you have is on meditation. It sounds like you've personally done a lot of work in clearing the mind and as you said, Yogi Bhajan said, when you do this kind of work, you actually clear out those filters. You actually help to erase the negative aspects of your self-talk and everything. So I think that's very true too. I mean, that the meditation practice or any spiritual practice is very helpful in removing the negative aspect of those filters.
Well, it really helps you also to center yourself. You know, I think most of us feel so overwhelmed and pulled in many, many different directions that we lose touch with who we really are. And so we identify ourselves with our job, our families, our cars, our houses. But somehow we don't really know what is it actually, if I'm stripped away from everything, what remains? Who am I actually? And that's certainly something that, especially in our busy world, is incredibly common, that we definitely lost somehow this identity of self. And meditation, just taking time to really clear your mind and center yourself and go into a space where you have a sense of who you are. You know, I don't think that we can ever really understand who we are, because there's so much to always discover, and we are so complex. We cannot wrap our mind around ourselves. It's just not possible. But we can get a sense of it. You know, there is like an energy, a sensation with it, and just getting there through a daily practice, that creates a foundation where things don't really shake you up anymore. And so I can highly recommend people to find some kind of an inner work, some kind of a meditation practice that helps them to, you know, north themselves every day.
I want to mention to you an unusual cause of anxiety that I see a lot I just want you to be aware of, because I think you may not be aware of it, but it's more physically based. I treat a lot of women who have mold in or around their breast implants, and in fact, I'm on Monsters Inside Me on Animal Planet showing mold and breast implants. But when people have sick building syndrome, and so that can either come from mold inside of themselves, it can be in their sinus or in their gut or in their around an implant, or it can also just be from biotoxins in a sick building, a building that has mold in it. In a genetically susceptible population, which is about 25% of the population, they develop a disease called fibromyalgia, which is a number of diseases, but that is one cause of fibromyalgia. And they get a large GABA deficiency as a result of that. So it's actually a neurotransmitter depletion. And, of course, their regular doctors put them on Klonopin or Ativan or whatever. And that works very well for them. But that can be very addictive. So what I found works really well is a substance or a supplement called Gabatrol or Gabamax. And it's got GABA, but it has a bunch of other neurotransmitters in it that really help this particular deficiency. And so if you've got any patients who are experiencing anxiety that isn't the result of subconscious things, because your book covers that very well, but these people, it's specifically the physical depletion of GABA that's causing it. So it's a physical it's a third dimensional cause of a third dimensional problem. Mm-hmm. And then we treat it with Gavitron, mm-hmm. Gavimax, and of course get rid of the, we give them antifungals, do the surgery to get rid of the implants, and all their anxiety goes away. And it's just an interesting sub.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they all have it.
Yeah,
I mean, college professor or whatever.
Yeah, I had, definitely good results with Travacor, which is similar. But, yeah, that's certainly, I think supplements and helping the body to build its natural biochemical stable place, and also to stimulate our immune system to be able mm-hmm. to handle, these kind of external challenges is absolutely important. It's very important. But I think fibromyalgia, just as an example, I think it's certainly possible that there is this deficiency and, also an external factor as a catalyst and the root cause. But very often mm-hmm. fibromyalgia is related to anxiety or depression or chronic stress that has just been, transferred into the body. And it's interesting, in Germany, actually, they do have a by insurance paid meditation program as a treatment mm-hmm. option for people with fibromyalgia, which I think is quite advanced.
That's,
so it's
yeah,
definitely
that
something.
That is good.
Yeah.
So in many patients who have an excess of fear and anxiety, they actually do spend a large portion of their time in a negative self-talk and mind-racing state. Would you like to comment on that and how what that comes from and how that produces the problems?
Well, when we are really watching ourselves, many people that have anxiety realize that although they wake up with anxiety, although they feel attacked by anxiety, ultimately, what happens if they would, freeze time or just slowly rewind it, they talk themselves into it. There was a thought mm-hmm. usually that started this process that created anxiety. And those negative thoughts can be either thoughts of, what if, the predicting something bad in the future. It can be mm-hmm. thoughts that are very, very critical about ourselves. It really can scare us, thoughts where we call ourselves stupid or fat or useless, things we would mm-hmm. never say to someone else. And I would tell the story where I do these workshops and then I let people just write down some of their really usual self-critical thoughts and then, everybody does it and everybody knows, I'm guilty of really being harsh. And then I let, two people exchange, sitting next to each other, exchange mm-hmm. their thoughts, and then let that neighbor say to this person, you are stupid, you are, fat. Mm-hmm. And just to get a feel of what would that feel like if someone else would say this to you? And how does it feel, actually, to say this to someone else? And mm-hmm. it's really an eye-opener how we are casually treating ourselves in the most mean way and how hurtful it would be this, to say this to someone else or to hear it from someone else. And that, certainly creates a greater mindfulness. But on a subconscious level, these thoughts have, again, a purpose. This inner critic, that part of us that spouts out those thoughts that are coming more automatic, there is, again, a purpose behind those, and that purpose is, once again, to keep us safe. And, many people know that they have been growing up in an environment that was very judgmental and very critical, mm-hmm. and as a result, they had to be on eggshells. They had to develop a radar system that made them aware of anything that was going around them. And mm-hmm. as a consequence also, they had to preemptively know if somebody potentially could be mad at them. If right. they were in a situation where they feel, well, the best thing for me is to be small and to not feel too good about myself, then often there is this inner critic that develops that almost, pretends plays those old tapes that they heard from other people just for you to stay on your toes, just for you to not let the guard down and potentially get in trouble. So we all know that when we have an inner critic, when we have negative self-talk and we become aware of it, usually what we feel is anger at ourselves, anger at the inner critic, anger at the part of us that says negative things, and all we want is to get rid of it. And in the book, I'm describing ways that really help you to understand you cannot get rid of a part of your mind. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. This is not like surgery. You cannot cut it out. And if you would, you would no longer be a whole person. You would be a fragmented person. Mm-hmm. You have to learn how to actually understand where this part comes from, what it actually tries to say, and how to address and communicate with this part. And the first step is this this negative, positive counterbalancing exercise that's described in the book. And it's certainly very helpful if you know how to work with it. And if people are interested in it and they're listening right now, I'm very happy to send you just this exercise. Just email us at info@thefearandanxietysolution.com. It's in one word, thefearandanxietysolution.com, and I'll send you a description of it.
And what I'm looking at here in the book is called the Parts Reintegration Process. So six steps to inner peace. So he actually has, in a way, to identify these parts and then an exercise to reintegrate them rather than to surgically remove them, like you said, doesn't work.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I talk in the book about these three root causes of fear and anxiety on a subconscious level, and one is the emotional baggage that we take through our lives with us, which often, you know, is just when you think about your past, you know, let's say your childhood or traumatic events, and you still feel just the thought of it, just in this moment, maybe having an image internally about what happened, and you feel a charge in your body, you feel maybe you cringe or you get tense or maybe your heart starts beating faster. That's a very clear indication that you haven't really released that emotional charge, that it's still there on your subconscious level, and that you need to take care of it, because what it does is when you have a lot of emotions stored in yourself, the threshold to feel anxiety is way lower. It's like the bathtub analogy. If you have the bathtub full, a few more drops and it overflows, and that's exactly what happens. And the parts reintegration process you just mentioned is the second, or works with the second root cause, which is this inner conflict that so many of us are dealing with. You know, I remember a client of mine who was a very, very successful head of a big company, had basically just climbed the ladder in a sprint. Nothing was too big for him. Anything that really he needed to reach, he did with ease. And but when he was at the top, at that moment where he had to give a presentation, you know, to this new group of people he was supposed to manage, all of a sudden he had his first panic attack. All of a sudden he felt, you know, like frozen, and it shocked him completely. And what he didn't realize until we really worked on that was that a part of him was always afraid of failure, always wondered if he's good enough, always was scared of getting criticized and judged. But he pushed that part aside because another part of him was just so driven and motivated and eager to be, you know, the best he can be, that basically he ignored that side. But then when the stakes were really high, when he had reached the top and he could lose everything, then that part that, again, is a scared inner protector said, oh, my God, now you are putting yourself really in trouble. And that brought up the panic attack. So there is an inner conflict often at the root of anxiety, the struggle between two sides. And it's a very powerful way to start healing anxiety when you learn how to resolve this battle.
And I think that most of us have had the experience of going, as when we're adults, going back and spending time with our families and then having the feeling that even though you were an accomplished, like in my case, surgeon, or, you know, in your case, cardiologist, within the dynamics of the family, I was the youngest. They're still treating me as if I'm the youngest and don't know anything. It's just hilarious. You
know? It's amazing, isn't it?
Great.
Yeah, I know.
It really is. It's just incredible. But I'm sure you've had the same feeling that there's a definite order within the family of who knows what.
Well, it's interesting because it's not only that you're treated this way, it's actually that after 2 or 3 days you feel this way.
Exactly. I don't know anything.
There are buttons.
I'm going to quit telling them what to do about their medical problems.
Well, there are buttons installed by people that, you grew up with, and they just find blindly these buttons, and your subconscious mind, again, this is an example of the distortion, forgets anything that actually is real about all of who we are, and what we have accomplished, and brings us right back into the patterns of our childhood. It's very fascinating.
Yeah, I think even in the Bible it was said about Jesus that you can't be a master or a prophet in your own town. they've already pigeonholed you as something else, which is pretty
right.
funny. So the next area that we talk about is in the chapter Time to Let Go. How do you actually release these patterns? How do you... without releasing them, they're going to happen again, given the example of me going back to my family. I mean, you're right, within about 3 days, you're acting like you're the young one.
Well, the patterns of anxiety are those, behavioral, mental, or thought patterns that we repeat over and over again, where we are so vigilant that, basically we have to double check everything to make sure we are safe, or we are not allowing ourselves to make connections with other people because we are afraid of being found out as a fraud, or, these kind of patterns that, I have been doing this since, I was a teenager, or even earlier. That sounds terrible on one level, because I think, oh my God, why am I still doing the same thing? Why am I still getting sweaty hands when I meet new people? Why am I still standing in the corner at a dinner party and don't talk to anybody, just like I did at the school dance? And the reason for that is because those patterns have been, on the subconscious level, never changed. You never had the ability to find a way to erase those patterns and replace them with new patterns. But here's the good news. The patterns are stored almost like beads on a string all together in the subconscious mind. And there is a process called the pattern resolution process that I have developed on the basis of timeline therapy, which was found by Dr. Ted James. That pattern resolution process allows you to go back to where these pattern started, this early programmings. And there you can actually then revisit these times when you are in a relaxed state. You see it from a higher perspective, and you can actually see angles of this event by asking certain questions that you haven't seen before. You can learn from these events lessons that you haven't understood before. Once you have learned those lessons, the subconscious actually lets go of this weight of the emotions, because the only reason why the subconscious holds on to those patterns is because they are enormous learning opportunities. They're like little red flags that are telling you, hey, Susan, you have to go back, you have to look down, and you have to learn from the past, because we are here to grow and evolve. We are here not to stay the same, and we only learn from the past, and we only learn when we go back in the past. And the best way to go back, of course, is when we are emotionally charged by it. So there's all a reason behind why we are holding on to these patterns. But as I said, because the patterns are all connected together, once you're releasing one or two of those early events, once you're understanding what you need to learn from those events, the subconscious can actually extrapolate the learnings to all those other events that fall in the similar pattern. Like a domino effect, you can actually release decades of emotional baggage in a matter of 30 minutes. by really learning from it and then teaching the subconscious how to take those learnings and basically go through all of those events where you just did the same. You know, it's like this aha effect. Once you get it, you get it. Once the veil has been lifted, there is no way back, and the patterns are gone. And you really feel, I mean, I had people that say, you know, I don't know, I have 100 pounds weight lifted off me. People tell me, you know, I saw the world in a very gray, black and white way. All of a sudden, there are patterns. I mean, it's amazing what that letting go of the emotions can do for you.
Yeah, one of the things that I did during my, I took 9 months off and just did spiritual work in 1990. And one of the things that I did was a process similar to this, where I just imagined a fear or anxiety coming up like a flashcard. So, you know, would it be, you know, of course you had to deal from everything from bankruptcy to rejection to even death, you know, even you had to even overcome the fear of death. And so it would come up, and then you would remember the past where it had come up before, and then you would project into the future, project into it having happened already, and see that you're still there. You know, it's kind of an interesting
right.
thing. You say you die. Well, you know, I have a certain belief system about what happens after death, and so I'm there, and I'm fine, and there's no problem, so I can release that fear
right.
of death. And then you take, this is a Toltec method, you breathe in and turn your head to the side, and as you breathe in, you take all of the energy back that you ever gave out with that fear, and then you turn and breathe out forcefully, making any energy within your field release that you don't need. And you do that until you get through all of the things that are coming up for you. And what I experienced was a tremendous lightening. And so I think I was doing something similar to what's described in your book, because what you're doing is taking every fear or anxiety that is a trigger for you and really energetically working with it along a timeline.
They
have all all the same, you know, things. And it was very powerful. It was, I think it's something I'd recommend for everybody, and including what you're doing in your book, which is very similar.
Well, you know, I think there are definitely many pathways that lead to Rome, and there are many ways for us to heal and overcome. And I think the most important thing is just to take the first step, no matter what it is, and really just decide to understand that you have the power to make those changes, but also at the same time realize, you know, fear and anxiety don't have to be demonized. They don't have to be seen as a disorder, as a sickness, as a flaw, as a weakness, but they are a part of you. They come from you, from within you. You have created them, and it's a good idea to understand why, and also know that, yes, I can uncreate the root causes, I can heal this, I can actually become more whole as a consequence of it. But then also seeing this not as a fixing, but as a growing. And I think that's what you have been doing. You know, like Carl Jung said, we cannot really, you know, fix the problem. We can only really outgrow it. And then you actually are a different person. And that's what in the book is... the last part of the book is about really understanding when we let go of something and our mind has now released the patterns, there's no conflict, you have let go of the emotional weight. We also work on limiting beliefs, limiting core beliefs, which are very, very powerful filters of the subconscious that can really keep you trapped. But if you let go of all of that, it's wonderful. But the problem is that you have to replace it with something new. If you're not, the subconscious says, well, you know, okay, now who am I? What am I supposed to do? Well, I cannot just be idle and hold on to nothing. I need to identify myself with something. And so your subconscious will just gravitate back to those familiar patterns because that's what it knows. So that last part of the book, which is about the de-identification and finding and defining a new way of seeing yourself and really deciding, who do I want to be when I grow up? Who do I want to see myself as? Not that this is like the final step for you on your journey, but it's like that next step, that next place of your personal evolution. And there are wonderful ways to work with the subconscious to shine light on your potential and then take that light and realize, okay, this is actually so much more the truth of who I am. This is what I actually want to use as a framework to grow into. And then as I do, I actually feel that anxiety is no longer the enemy. Anxiety is simply a messenger and in some ways even a friend who keeps me on track. And like in your case, warns me of certain situations that I need to take attention, take care of or have attention for.
Yeah, I think that's true. And the other thing that I think we need to emphasize is that we do have an internal guidance system. And that internal guidance system has knowledge outside of space and time. It has knowledge of what our potential really is that we may not even be aware of. So the relationship with that guidance, which is strengthened with meditation and other spiritual disciplines, is one of the most important things we can do. I mean, if you had, if you were dependent on a vehicle to get you around and you completely ignored, you know, putting oil in it or gas in it or even paying attention to the dials, how well would you motor around in life? You wouldn't. You know, you have to pay attention and understand that this guidance system, taking care of this guidance system is one of the most important things you can do.
You know, there is a saying, the only price we pay in life is attention, and I completely agree with that. And I think it's important to pay attention to all of those things that are internal and find a balance, at least, to not have 90% of your focus and your energy go to the external world. And, you know, we know that, especially people that are anxious. And, you know, for many years, I have been anxious myself. I couldn't be, by myself without having the TV on or without right away going to the phone and calling somebody up or, you know, going to the internet. I mean, it was really uncomfortable being by myself and being with myself. And that's, of course, the opposite of what you need, because what you really need is to gain awareness and create a relationship with yourself. And the Fear and Anxiety Solution book is a very, very powerful way to do this, because it's, you know, that's where my research medicine mind, I guess, helps, because it's very logical. It has a very step-by-step pathway laid out for you. It's not confusing. It's not something where you feel like, oh, now I have to subscribe to some belief system or whatever. It's really just for you. Everyone can use it, and you can follow it at your own pace. It's so designed that every chapter will make an impact on your feeling of anxiety. Every chapter, you will actually feel there is a relief, there is a sense of empowerment, there is a sense of greater awareness. And if you want to stay with one chapter for a month and just practice those tools in there, perfect. And then you just keep on going. This can be a companion for years for you, but you will feel after the first or second chapter already so much better. So I can, you know, not to toot my own horn, but you can definitely benefit from it, and I'm sure you will.
And I can tell you, because I went through a similar education, it was, you know, through different teachers. Michael Rice was one of my best teachers in teaching me about the subconscious filters. I mean, he has a whole body of information on that. And then the Toltec exercise I just described. But I can tell the listeners that this book is going to work, okay? The exercises, the information are really good. And so it's the Fear and Anxiety Solution, a breakthrough process for healing and empowerment with your subconscious mind. And it's so it's such a good book that already, just wandering around my center this morning, one of my employees asked to have it after the after the interview. So there you go. It's already going to go
great.
On and help
Thank
somebody.
You.
Isn't that great? Yeah.
That's wonderful.
So,
that's great.
Would you mind giving your contact information again? I'm sure you've got a website with your, with all of the events and everything on it.
Well, there are two websites. One is thefearandanxietysolution.com. It's written actually in one word, no space, thefearandanxietysolution.com. And the other one is called cellularwisdom.com, also in one word. Both give you ample information of who I am, what I'm doing, what I'm offering also in individual sessions. There will be actually a new website, thefearandanxietysolution.com, which has also webinars that are coming up and weekly classes and so on. If you're interested in individual classes or have just questions, I'm offering free phone consultations, so you can just send us an email or fill out one of those forms, and we'll get in touch with you, and then we can talk and see how this work I'm offering can help you to overcome these challenges of anxiety or depression. Also, like we talked at the beginning, finding the root causes of chronic physical challenges.
That's very generous of you. I also want to tell the audience that it's my opinion, and I don't know whether you agree with me or not on this, but it's my opinion that drugs like Xanax, which are highly addictive, drugs like the SSRI inhibitors, have a profound blocking effect on spiritual development. And this is based on years of observation of people on these who are trying to do spiritual work at the same time. So, we're not talking about depression today, but certainly fear and anxiety are often just treated with Xanax. And that is just not only, it will work for the anxiety, but it will not work for the overall picture of addressing the root cause and then having spiritual development to the point where you can get over that. And it may actually inhibit your spiritual development.
Well, I think, with Xanax, it's certainly that I think you're basically falling asleep. And and that certainly can feel good in the moment when you just are tortured. And so all those medications can really help you to get out of this vicious cycle. The challenge is just that the tendency, and this has been documented in research, is that more people are just basically inclined, and also that doctors are telling them, take that drug, take that pill, and less people go into any form of therapy. And and I think that's, we are, I think, missing out. Now, antidepressants, SSRI inhibitors, I think they are not necessarily making you asleep, but they make you numb. So you're not necessarily connected to your emotional guidance system. But I also feel like some people are so charged emotionally that it's hard for them really to comprehend and have the inner space to do deeper inner work. So I have worked with people that have been on all different kinds of medications, and I find that somehow our subconscious or higher consciousness or inner light, whatever we want to call it, that goes beyond the intellect, is strong enough when we really connect to it to also make us find a relationship with that, truth of who we are. So I don't think that's really that we, have to say, well, you have to get off before you go on your spiritual path. But it is certainly a good idea to have this as a goal eventually to say, I am working on myself. I'm going to work on my personal and also, if you choose to, spiritual evolution. And then I want to have my medication, not as, my crutch any longer. I want to let it go. And most people I'm working with are able to get off the medication within a few months.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying not to use it during emergencies. I think there is a place for that. But what the medical field is doing is just leaving people on it for the rest of their life in general.
Exactly.
That's what's happening.
Well, and that's the message.
I don't think that's good
for them. The message is, I don't think so either. I totally agree, because the message is you're flawed, you have a problem, and the medication is the only thing that can help you. And
that's
you know, where you and I and many other people that I think want to help people to empower themselves to take the healing back into their own hands, I think are definitely, hopefully, making an impact.
I hope so, too. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We've been interviewing Dr. Friedemann Schwab, who is the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution. And please take him up on his offer to do a telephone consult if you have questions. And please get his book. It's excellent, with it's full of exercises and great information to help you understand where your fear and anxiety come from and how you can use it to gain greater self-awareness. Thanks so much for joining us.